Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
It's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
That's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast one. Holy cow.
We're rebranding the show. Instead of RBP Weekly, we're going to call it RBP After Dark because we're going to get a little bit more unfiltered with things just because we felt the show was a little bit bland before. So we're going to try and spice things up a little bit. On this week's episode, we have Bud, who's going to be previewing the Duck Creek Walleye Series. This is the third leg, and we're going to see how his outlook's coming for the tournament. And we are going to talk about tournament tackle storage. Whether you're a tournament fisherman or not, we're going to talk about tackle efficiency and how to get in and out of your tackle boxes quicker and ways to keep up on lure maintenance. It's a small topic, but I think it's an important one to address to help out with you guys with your tackle efficiency. So let's get into the show here. Bud, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Tired, hot.
Tired, hot? Not used to these 80 degree temperatures yet, are you?
No, I'm not.
Neither am I. I thought I actually went golfing before this, and I thought I was going to have a heat stroke, and it's only 80 degrees out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I take it work was pretty hot for you.
Last week was rough, but I'm done for the week, so I'm good now.
Oh, you got the next couple days off?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Do you have any beverages that you're drinking tonight?
Just my Coors.
I got a Lakefront Brewery Cup with ice water in it. So.
Typical me.
I gotta get like a 30 pack of coolers in the refrigerator just for the nights that we do this.
You gotta man up, man.
I know. I'm just a cheap ass though, to be quite honest. That's my problem. So, if any of you guys have anything that you're drinking out there that sounds good, put them in the comments below because me and Bud are always willing to try a different beer, as long as it's cold, and especially if it's free. So, Bud, how's your outlook for the tournament looking?
Pretty poor. As of right now, I've been out since the last tournament. That was the last time I caught a fish over 20 inches. So I'm on a little struggle bus right now.
Is that like 3 or 4 weeks?
It's two weekends because I took Memorial Weekend off.
Oh, okay. Man.
But I haven't caught a fish over 17 inches.
Dang. That sucks.
As of right now, if I just put 5 fish in the box, I'm thinking I'll be happy. I know I'm not going to do good, but at least I'll be happy if I put 5 fish in the box.
Well, this is about as confident as I've ever seen you going into a tournament.
No. My most confident was the freaking first one this year, and we freaking bombed that, so.
Yeah.
As long as I weigh one fish, I'll be happy because that gives me like 300 and some more points as long as I weigh one fish.
Yes, he is extremely confident going into this tournament.
I just don't want to take a zero. That's all I care about.
Yeah, I hear you. So, what do you think's going on? Like, what's with the struggle?
Well, you had the cold spring, and it took forever for the water to heat up. And then in a matter of a week, it jumped like 50 degrees. So, there's a huge freaking bug hatch right now on the West Shore. We went out of Ocano on Saturday, and we marked a ton of fish, but they're all sitting on bug hatches. You can literally see the bugs coming up out of the bottom. So they're just engulfing all the freaking bugs and filling up on that. So we can't give them a bite on any cranks or anything like that. On the East Shore, East Shore, I was marking a lot of fish. Didn't really mark a lot of bug hatches, but there, I think they're just becoming more scattered. You're still finding pods, but I think they're kind of moving out. So I'm thinking I'm going to start transitioning out deeper. I'm going to start going out to that 20-plus feet of water and just start driving around trying to find that pod. That's my hope, at least.
So are you pulling cranks? Are you mixing in crawler harnesses? Are you using slip bobber? What?
Saturday, we pulled cranks for an hour, switched over to harnesses, then we jigged one spot, and then we went back and we pulled more harnesses. And Saturday, we did pick up our one fish on a harness, plus we got a couple perch. Then Sunday, I went out. Sunday, I strictly pulled cranks all day, and I caught 3 walleyes and then some junk.
Have you thought about going with the slip bobber at all? I know Tom Boley on his channel, that's pretty much all they're doing right now, is what I've seen.
I've thought of it, but I don't know. You can fish it fast, but at the same time, I'm trying to cover ground just to find fish at this point.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, I figured by jigging, because we were jigging live bait, so we figured if there were active fish there, I mean, a slip bobber versus a jig and a minnow, I think we'd get them either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got all the stuff for it. I can easily do it, but
yeah,
I just haven't tried it. Looking into this weekend, I think slip bobbers can be kind of tough with the wind.
Yeah.
Then tomorrow they're talking like 15 mile an hour winds. Friday's 20. Saturday we got like a 10 mile an hour wind, but it's out of the northwest, so it should be ripping pretty good.
Yeah. Have you thought about giving it like a couple hour try just to see if that subtlety will work or no?
I mean, I would be opposed to it if it comes down to it. I mean, if nothing else works, then
yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much your slowest presentation you can get, and you're burning a lot of time by trying it.
Yeah.
Versus a position.
Yeah, that. Yeah, I hear you. I suppose if you're marking fish, if you find the fish and mark them and they're not biting anything else, it might be worth a shot. So.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, especially if you're marking active fish, if you're marking fish off bottom.
Yeah.
And you can't get right on anything else. I mean, then drop down to it just because you're gonna literally be letting it sit right in front of their face.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully you can find some sort of pattern that works out for you, because the pattern, it seems like your non-pattern seems kind of bullshit right now.
Pretty much. I mean, I did figure out a little pattern on Sunday. I mean, I ended up getting one color pattern that was hot. All 3 of my fish came on the same color pattern, so at least I got that going.
Gotcha. Perry, I'm not sure if you've been out in the bay. Has anything worked for you or anything like that? Obviously, we can use any tips that anyone else has out there right now. Because, I mean, have you really ever fished this time period like this intensely? Like, I've known we've gone out during the summer, but it's been kind of sporadic. But have you, like, fished this intensely, like, trying to actively find fish this time of year?
No, normally with doing that one tournament in May, then I kind of just blow it off for about a month, you know, just because I fished so hard going into that.
Yeah.
You know, this year with more tournaments, yeah, I've just been grinding hard the whole time.
Yeah. So
pretty much it's the end of May and June, I normally take off of walleye fishing and I go do other stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, honestly, it's pretty inexperienced at this point of your tournament career, or I don't know how to phrase it, your tournament time. So hopefully you can figure something out. Have you heard any good reports or anything from anyone else, or no?
No. Everybody's saying it's slow and bad right now. You know, but that's going from off a guide to them, a slow day is 20 fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'd be tickled pink for 20 fish, but you're hearing a lot of guys still just catching eaters.
Yeah.
Everybody's complaining about the bug hatch.
Well, and I suppose, just thinking about it, I mean, we've been I mean, down here, I'm not sure if it's been this way up there. We've been in a drought for almost a month now, maybe even a little bit longer. I mean, I was looking at some of the waters around here, and they just look like complete trash right now with the algae blooms. I mean, it...
Yeah, but whole algae.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, it's great. We were probably 4 miles out, and there was just a whole bunch of freaking crap floating around, like big clumps of just mossy algae like you'd see in the swamp.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's conditions we haven't seen for years. I mean, the last 5 years, we've been having high water. This is like the first time in, yeah, like 5 years where it's been drought conditions, lower waters. It's so the fish are probably all messed up too.
Probably.
So, yeah. And
I see Perry's comment doesn't help me for a tournament very much.
Yeah, after dark doesn't help very much, Perry. I've heard a lot of guys getting on better night bites than day bites overall. But.
Well, I mean, it cools down a little bit. I mean, on Sunday, my best, I popped 2 fish Sunday in the first half hour. You know, and I was out there super early, so it just showed you how much more active they were then.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys on Instagram, a lot of the big guys, I'm just seeing everything they're catching is at night. They're not even fishing during the day. So it makes sense, Perry, if you're having luck after dark, because that's what I'm seeing around social media. So, but that's hard when you're fishing 7-3. So, well, hopefully, you have something that all it takes is one fish though, bud, you know, as well as I do, where you're like, I got it. So,
oh yeah. You know, that's all it takes. It just takes that one fish to start going. And you can build off of that. That's the key. You got to get that one fish and you can start working from there.
Yeah. And maybe, I believe I did see a chance of rain coming up before the weekend. So maybe that rain will flush out the system and, you know, revitalize the water. I don't know how else to phrase that, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. You get a post-frontal condition, but at the same time, maybe it'll just give them a spark to change. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But I go ahead.
I said fish are fucking stupid, and it just irritates me. I can't figure it out.
Yes, fish are stupid. I agree with that 100%. But I was going to say that front looks to be coming through Thursday, so I think you'll be good to go by Saturday. But you guys get it after us, so who knows?
Ours is supposed to come through Thursday night.
Yeah, that's when ours is too, so we'll see. We need the rain down here. I'll tell you what, the soybeans and the corn, they look like freaking garbage right now. So, yeah. Perry, yeah, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. All the guys post on social media between those time periods. So, if you're looking to catch fish, folks, head out there, you know, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., like Perry said. But if you're tournament fishing, it's a little bit harder to do that. So, bud, you got some tackle storage tips that we can talk about here?
Sure. I don't know, I mean, how we want to go about it, but I guess my main things. So I always run, I got one tray here. This is going to hold pretty much our starting lineup. And any lure that is going to be the first one to switch in. You know, and that's going to be anything, you know, either similar style and action, but just a different color, or maybe the same color, but a different bait. You know, it's going to be all of our, you know, you're pretty much backups. And then with me running a smaller boat, and I don't like a lot of stuff laying around on the floor and on my deck, I have a second empty tray, and this will be for any lures that we used. Any lure that we use going into here, and at least then we know what we've tried and what we've gone through. The only other thing is, you know, if it's got a bent hook or something, you know, at least then you know to replace it. You're not throwing it back into its home. you know, we go through the end of the day, and that's when we go and do all of our repairs. Then after that, I run, I don't know if you can see that, but I run milk crates. I actually have two of these, and those are going to be all of my real common lures that I use the most. Like these are all my number 7 flicker shads. I actually have 5 of these trays now that I run all of my stuff. They're all individually compartment. I don't mix colors or anything like that. They all got their own home, and that's just my way of being organized. I can, any color that I got in my head, I just pull out and I can throw it on. I can find it quick. I'm not digging through 8 different crankbaits to, you know, find the one that I'm trying to get. Can I show you this one? This is my new trays. I just picked these up. These are Amish Outdoors. And what's kind of nice about these is they're a vertical pattern. And they actually, they're really nice for minnow baits. I'll show you on this one. You think that you gotta actually lose some space, but it kind of just, you know, it lays out your minnows.
Oh, nice.
You're probably gonna be good for bandits and P10s and stuff like that. I run all my flicker minnows in these now. We got double-sided. You can get like, well, I can fit 2 number 9s in each compartment. 2 number 7s can fit in each compartment. And then when you drop down to the 7s, you can actually fit 3 in there.
Nice, nice.
Oh, yeah. One of these small trays, I can fit, I'd be 42 number 7 minnows.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot smaller tray than 3700s that I normally run.
Yeah, that'll help your efficiency. So you said Amish Outdoors makes that?
Yeah, that one was, yeah, I ended up, I picked it up down in Appleton at TRS.
Okay.
They actually had it on sale, and frankly, right now, you can't find any freaking tackle trays anywhere because everybody sold out of them.
Okay.
So, ended up, they're a little bit more than, you know, your 3-pack of 37s from Fleet Farm.
Okay.
I think, remember, like, $14 for 3. I mean, I paid $8.50 for one of them.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's good construction. They got vent holes in it to let your water breathe out.
Oh, that's...
So that's plus.
That's nice.
It allows water to go in it, but it allows water to go out. You're not going to trap, you're not going to vapor lock them.
Nice. Yeah, I'll make sure to put a link to that in the video and on the podcast link for those of us who are podcast listeners. I'll do that. Then you label each one with the color for each one, so you can go back, and if you lose one, you can go on Berkeley's website or Fleet Farm and get the correct bait. So that's super nice. Another quick question for you. I know we've dealt with rusting treble hooks in the past. What have you done to combat that?
So pretty much me is I let my lures dry in the sun once I take them off. That's your number one thing. I don't put wet lures away. If now when I'm fishing and say I'm fishing in rain or I'm in really bad water conditions, let's just say, I tend to take some waves over the bow. And actually my whole bow is a giant tackle box for me. I think I got like 35 tackle trays up there. So when I take one over the bow, yeah, my tackle is shot. So then I come home and I literally set up 2 long tables. And I open up every container, and I let it air out for at least 2 days. You know, and I have fans on them and stuff like that. What I have heard a lot of guys do is you can go on Amazon, and you can buy them little silicone packets or whatever that, you know, you buy clothes or something like that, or, you know, a new tackle bag. They got them silicone packs in it. And some guys will drop 1 silicone pack in every tackle tray, and that'll actually absorb some moisture too. Because that's your biggest comeback, is just you got to beat the moisture because that's what's going to eat your hooks. That's what's going to eat your snap rings, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think another minor thing that you do is you do the rubber band thing where you wrap them around your trebles so you're not sitting there shaking trebles and untangling them, and super efficient, super nice. Yeah, if you would have bust out a couple lures, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, you just look at here. So I got four crankbaits. I have six crankbaits in this one compartment. Because, you know, everybody needs Fire Tiger. You got to have a Fire Tiger. But yeah, you sit there, you rubber band your hooks up, and then you're not sitting there fighting for 5 minutes to, you know, untangle to get one bait out.
Yeah.
That's a big thing to do.
Yeah, I even do that in my kayak too, because it just makes it a lot easier handling baits with treble hooks when you don't got a lot of room to work with. So, really like that.
Yeah.
And yeah. I like the way Bud setup is both the most efficient it can be, because the way he has it laid out, I believe you have those hot boxes in the milk crates, right?
Yep.
And
those we move around, you know, wherever it makes it comfortable for us.
Yeah. And those, just so you guys understand, hot boxes are basically the lures that are hot that time of year. And it's made a lot easier rather than Bud asking me and Andy to go, hey, can you dig this one out? Can you dig that one out? Just makes life a lot easier. So if you guys are limited on boat storage, I'd consider getting those milk crates. Just set them right up front. They're not in the way, especially when you're trolling. So that was a good move that we've made, that Bud's made this year. Then everything else you have below up front. And do you have those milk crates too, or how do you got those stored up?
Just Lewis. They're pretty much all 3,700 trays, the bigger trays.
Okay.
I have them all labeled on three sides, so it doesn't matter how I look at them. The ends are labeled, so I know, I got, like, all my Rapala deep husky jerks are in a tray. And I got, like, all my Bagley lures are in a tray. Then I got all my reef runners are in a tray. You know, it's easy enough. I can just peek in there, and I know where I'm not trying to dig through trays.
Yeah.
So, but now you touched the milk crates there. That Amish Shirt Outdoors that we're going to leave a link to for these new double-sided trays that I found.
Yeah.
They actually have a deal. The more trays you buy, they drop the price on them for you.
Nice.
So they give you, but then they actually make custom tote bags.
Oh, really?
The trays.
Wow.
So you can buy a set of five, and you can get a tote bag that holds five.
You know where they're based out of? Are they based out of Wisconsin, or?
I didn't look. My guess would be, I think they're probably more like, I think they're kind of probably Ohio.
Okay.
Because they've got a whole bunch of, like, big control and, like, mass planer boards. And they got a whole bunch of just different random stuff on there. They got ice fishing stuff, ice fishing tackle storage, trolling stuff, bass stuff, a lot of tackle trays.
Okay.
And I think they're out of Ohio. Or it might be Michigan. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it seemed like a small company.
Yeah, I'm just looking them up here. It looks like they're called Amish Outfitters.
Oh, is that what it is? Outfitters?
Yeah, Amish Outfitters. And they got some stuff on Fish USA. I'm trying to... they have a website and everything. So I'll be sure to... Yeah, I'll be sure to link those. Cool.
Yeah. It's a little bit more, but as long as the trays hold up, Man, I buy them Fleet Farm trays and stuff like that, man. They hold up, but it seems like you bang them around a little bit, and then pretty soon you came in a corner on them, and then they're cracked.
Yeah.
Break off a lap. I mean, these ones, they got a nice big latch on them, so I'm hoping they hold up.
Oh,
you get what you pay for, I guess.
Yeah, like all my tackle trays that have the latches like that, I've been a big fan of them. Seems like they're pretty secure. And I've noticed with the Fleet Farm ones too, you kind of get like a little ridge in them. So even like your smaller hooks, then they're ended up all over the place. That's been pretty annoying with those Fleet Farm ones. So
yeah, they warp.
Yeah. So Fleet Farm does the trick, but if you spend an extra dollar or two, those Amish ones sound like they're worth it. So, I'm not sure if you brought them out or anything, but since we're talking tackle, how do you store your crawler harnesses?
Crawler harnesses.
Okay.
I run the old pool noodle. Then I run one of the bigger Play-Doh boxes. I get like 5 noodles. I cut them to the exact size. Yeah, you can get quite a few harnesses on them. If you run just the line on them and take the blades off, you can probably fit more. Yeah, anybody else has ideas though for harnesses? I'd love to hear them because honestly, this is still way too big and bulky for me. I want to find something smaller, you know, but it's hard with, I like storing mine with blades on, but you know, then they take up more room.
Yeah, the best ways I've seen on YouTube has been just the pool noodle, like what you're using. I haven't seen anything better than that yet.
Yeah, my blades, I mean, that's the best way I have right now. I do all the individual purchases. I know that there's another company. They run, like, plastic pieces in there, and then they put rivets up. So I don't know, you know, if you're familiar with when you do a rivet, before the rivet actually snaps, it leaves that long shank on there yet.
Yep.
Slide all your blades on them shanks. I do like that idea. I just haven't been able to find that tray, and I've been too lazy to make my own. So.
Yeah, I've seen those. Those are pretty cool. So.
And honestly, my least favorite way of fishing is with crawler harnesses, so I try to just not do it anyway.
See, this is Bud's least favorite time of year to fish, I think, because that's pretty much what you got to use. So.
That's why I'm trying to fish the shore more, man.
Yeah.
It seems like shore you can keep them on a crankbait, but
yeah,
easier than the whip. For the amount of tackle that I got, I think I do a pretty good job at keeping it organized and clean, at least.
Yeah. Bud's a tackle whore.
Huh?
You're a tackle whore.
I am. I always say Dale is going to inherit a freaking $1 million in freaking crankbaits one day. Because that's the sad part. I mean, I got my boat, that's all just my walleye stuff.
Well, put it this way, folks. Bud's tackle and harnesses and bobbers is probably worth more than the boat is.
I got that new sonar now. The new sonar upgrade the value.
Oh, if you're counting electronics, yeah. Because I was going to be like, that fucking motor's dog shit.
Yeah.
So, hopefully Bud has all that figured out. So, but Bud has a lot of tackle. So, other than that, thanks. I appreciate you talking to the people out there about how you store your tackle and whatnot. Might as well do Would You Rather, eh?
Oh, I forgot about Would You Rather.
Would You Rather? Okay. Well, I got stuff. If you want me to just run with what I got.
You might as well.
Alright, so here's what I got. So, would you rather have a bag of grouse, like a full bag, your daily limit? Your full limit.
Northern.
Sorry?
Northern or southern?
Northern.
Alright. That's more. Last time I think so.
Okay.
I want to say 5 up north and like 3 down south or something.
Okay. A full bag of pheasants. Like, I'm not talking game farm. I'm talking like public land pheasants.
So, not opening weekend, 2 birds. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
All right.
Or a full limit of... well, you can't really put a limit on ducks because each species has a different amount that you can keep. But we'll just say, I don't know, 3 to 5 ducks. And what would you... What do you think would be more... I don't know. What would you rather achieve, I guess, out of those three?
achieve?
Yeah, what do you think, like, is the hardest to achieve out of all those? And, like, you would take pride in most in filling.
I guess... this is all Wisconsin?
Yeah, we're talking Wisconsin. No other state. We're talking all public land. Yeah, public land for the pheasant, public land for the grouse, public land for the ducks. Okay. Oh, Andy just... Sorry, Andy just texted. He said the duck limit's 6. So, there we go.
Yeah, but then it's like, you know, then it breaks. It's like, then there's subcategories.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, 6 ducks, period. I mean, I guess I would love to shoot a limit, like, be more specific, because I've only seen it one time in Wisconsin, but it was a duck tornado.
Okay.
On a field hunt. I would love to do like a limit of like 6 mallards in a duck tornado out of a field mine.
Okay.
You know, that's what I would say. Because, you know, grouse hunt like over a dog, like Boston brush.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, then you can still, you know, you do the, where you're kind of driving the two tracks and stuff like that. It's easily doable.
Okay.
You know, same thing with the pheasant hunt, you know, is. You know, you get on a good field or something down by you, or we got our planted fields up here. You know, plus you can shoot hens. You know, it's not rooster only.
Yeah.
It's something that's it's easily obtainable.
Yeah.
That duck tornado thing. I mean, like, you have to, like, your car's got to line up exactly right. And at this thing, I think that would be your most memorable experience.
Oh, I agree with you. Like, overall experience, I think the duck tornado would be a great experience. Yeah, for me... This is a good question. Because, to be honest with you folks, I haven't experienced killing anything listed. I've made attempts with my bow on grouse and pheasants. I mean, for me, I think it'd be a pheasant because they're so damn cool looking. Like, I know ducks look cool, grouse look cool, but I mean, I just like that ring neck and the green, I don't know. And getting a number of those would be absolutely awesome. I think a full limit. And plus, I mean, for table fare, I don't think there's much better tasting food than a pheasant, so.
I don't know, dude. A corn-fed mallard is right behind it.
Is it? I haven't had one, so.
Yeah, you get a corn-fed mallard that is like a nice quarter-inch layer of fat on it. Oh, yeah, dude, that's top-notch.
Okay. So make sure you're sitting, like, just off like the wildlife sanctuary then off the bay. Yeah, if you guys aren't from Green Bay, we have something called the wildlife sanctuary where kids are allowed to feed ducks and geese all sorts of corn, and it's just a freaking mayhem. It's a unique experience. We'll leave it at that. Has Dale been able to do that yet? You get attacked by any of them yet?
Almost. We were out there in this spring, and it was nesting season, and he wanted to go play around with the geese, and yeah, that wasn't a good idea.
That would be fun to see him do that. So.
I think he's gone.
Now Andy's throwing some more stuff in here. It'd be easier if he just came on the podcast. He says 4 mallards is the limit. And one can be female. So, I don't know. There's too many duck things out there where, I don't know. I just called it 3 or 4.
So. And then, like, if you shoot like some left-handed or something, then it might be different. I don't know. Or behind your head. I don't. You know. And then if it's flying with like a left wing versus a right wing, it's.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different rules.
Yeah, I know this September I've been floating different ideas around because I've tasted deer meat. I have an Iowa tag coming up in October. Everyone knows that. But man, the way that dove tasted last year when we were hunting up in the Northwoods, that was phenomenal, dude. Where I would like to get a pile of those.
That's so primitive cooking. Like, you couldn't get any more primitive than that.
No. That was awesome. Bud just ripped off he took the guts out, ripped off the feathers, put it on a stick above the fire, and that thing was one of the best tasting things I've ever had.
Like, I don't even know if we had salt and pepper or anything.
No, it was just the raw bird. So I'm like, Bud kind of turned me on to like chasing after doves, whether it's the opening weekend or the second weekend. I feel like, I feel like that's a tradition that we should open up with every year, is just trying to chase some doves, man.
Yeah.
We
gotta get a connection to some farmers.
Yeah.
Fields.
So.
They're proud upon you shooting them off the power wires. You know, that's where I always see them.
Yeah, I hear them. I heard one. Actually, one or two of them always come in this evergreen tree I got by my apartment here. So, maybe I'll have to bust out the BB gun.
Bird feeders, I don't know.
But the way they tasted last year, I was like thinking, we got to start taking advantage of those. I know if you've tried hunting them in the past and you weren't successful. I think you did that once, right?
Yeah, I've done it a handful of times.
Yeah.
From Luxembourg and stuff. You know, and that was more like, I don't know, it's like we had good spots. Like, we had guys that we actually got a couple.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like gangbusters.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to get like, I don't know, I'm not sure what the limit is, but it'd be nice to get a limit of them. So.
I think like 10 or 15 or something like that.
Shit. That would be awesome. Yeah, because that's always something I've thought about is...
Yeah, it sucks. It's like right now you're blowing freaking 50 cents a fucking round and shoot an 8-ounce bird.
That's true. I didn't think of that. Do you have to shoot them with steel or can you shoot them with lead?
I believe how it's worded is if you are on public land... No. You are on DNR-managed land.
Okay.
You can use non-toxic.
Okay.
If you are like county land or something like that, or private property, then you can use lead.
Okay.
I believe that's how it's worded. You know, don't quote me. You know, always look at the regulations for yourself, double check. But I believe that's how it's worded. If it is DNR managed land, so you know, like your Scarbrough, Navarino.
Yeah.
Marsh, all them kind of places.
Yeah.
I believe you use non-toxic lead or non-toxic shot then. But yeah, if you go to some county forest or something, or you go to your grandpa's pond, it's whatever.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know then. So I know what ammunition to buy. I'll probably ask you that again when season gets closer. And there is some positive developments I've heard coming from ammunition plants. I heard that they're starting to catch up with the ammunition in stores and whatnot. It sounded like Andy was out purchasing some this past week, and he said that there was more and more on shelves compared to the last time he was in. So hopefully, and that was on some of the podcasts I was listening to. It sounds like they're about a month behind, but they're starting to catch up, so that's positive.
Hopefully.
So.
You know, hopefully the price goes down a little bit, but it probably won't.
Yeah. But, then something else that I was thinking of doing is, you know, trying some duck hunting up in that northern zone, I think, would be pretty fun. Last weekend in September. It just, I'm just trying to think of all the ways that we can take advantage of, you know, opportunities. And
it's nice. Well, you mean you could easily flop your kayak over too to hunt ducks out of.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be nothing for you to drag just, you know, 6-8 decoys.
Yeah.
Behind your kayak, you know, and just go sit somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in just the Northwoods, Bud and I noticed it. There's so many little pothole type lakes that, I mean, even wearing waders out there, I mean, it seems like there's enough of those ponds where there's going to be pressure, but there's so many of those little ponds that I think you can get away from it. So.
I think that's the main thing, I think, to look like up there is just don't be on the ones that are, like, right on the road, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if you can find the one where you gotta, like, walk back in a half mile or something.
Yeah.
It's no different than, you know, deer hunting or something. You know, you walk off the road a little bit, and it's amazing the less pressure you get.
Yeah. And I suppose you can...
Especially the ones where you can't get a boat to or something. You have to have a dog. You're not... You know, you got so many lakes where you can launch a boat from, you know, that's how a lot of guys have their duck blind.
Yeah, that's not a bad point, bud. Even if me, you, and Andy went up there together, and we'd say if we didn't have a dog, even though Andy has a dog right now, I mean, it's nothing for me to get a kayak back there, because I got a rolly cart and everything now, so yeah. But I don't know. If you guys are looking for opportunities before whitetail season, those are, you know, just a couple options. I know the ducks, like, September 25th, but it's another option if you're looking for something else. Is there any other, like, hunts in September that open that you know about, or is that pretty much it?
Everything opens.
Pretty much everything?
Except Woodcock
too?
What?
Yeah, I know grouse opens. I know Woodcock opens.
Pheasants October, but yeah, you got squirrel, you got early goose is September 1, you know, same with dove.
Yeah. And
then if you actually travel out of state, I want to say if you go to Minnesota, you can get on an even earlier goose hunt. I want to say there's like a super early goose hunt in Minnesota.
Huh.
That's like August, like mid-August or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I might as well look it up.
I want to say it's like a bag limit of 10 or something like that, if I remember right. I want to say it's a bigger bag limit.
Yeah, you're right, bud. So early goose in Minnesota this year starts September 5th, and it goes all the way to the 20th. And that's a statewide hunt, too. Statewide.
But that's September 5th.
Yep.
Or is that August?
September 5th.
I thought they had one in August.
Let's see here.
Because Wisconsin's is September 1, so.
No. It's early goose season, September 5th. That's for 2020, though. So don't go off that, folks. But it is an earlier goose season. They do have a sandhill crane season. Yeah. Daily limit of 2.
Go do that right by the sky, man.
That's what I'm thinking. I didn't realize they had a sandhill crane season. Season starts September 19th. Goes to October 25th.
Do it.
We're going to have to talk about that. That's more intriguing to me than doing the duck hunt, even though ducks would be cool, but we're going to have to look at that tag cost and everything. So I don't know. I don't have much else tonight. You have anything?
Not a whole lot, man. Trying to figure out how you can catch fish this weekend.
I hope you figure something out. I guess I forgot to add, I did go to Colorado. I think it was...
Yeah, that.
It was all right. It was, we didn't get
it. One shitty experience, but.
Yeah. I threw all my guts out because I learned that carne asada does not sit well with my stomach. So that was a learning experience. So I vomited all over Rocky Mountain National Park. That was pretty fun. Lisa thought she was going to have to call the ambulance. It was kind of funny because I was barfing right next to the front gate, just everywhere. It was hilarious. Like, she was worried about me because I was rolling around in my puke. But I knew I'd be fine. I just had to throw up the carne asada. But she was worried about me. So that's good to know that one person in this world actually worries about me. So,
she didn't want to figure out how to get your ass back here.
That's true too. So, but anyway, I did bring the fishing poles, but we just ran out of time for fishing. We put 4,000 miles on the rental car, over 4,000.
Oh, you guys rented a car?
Yeah, that's what we do when we do our road trips, because it's 4,000 miles that aren't on my car. And not gonna lie, we kind of beat the shit out of the rental cars when we're in the national parks. Yeah, we're probably going in areas we probably shouldn't. So, but we didn't have time for trout fishing, but I found a couple sweet spots out there where I'd like to make a trip out there for going trout fishing, whether it's when we do a mule deer hunt or elk hunt. I'm gonna bring at least one rod with, because there's some sweet spots out there. We did see some bull elk. That was cool. Their freaking antlers are freaking ginormous already. Saw some mule deer. I did spot a goat. That was freaking awesome. I meant a sheep, Rocky Mountain sheep. Lisa could not see the thing at all, and I had to point it out to her like 12 times. She's like, "That's a goat." Then it moved, and I was like, "Yes, that's a goat." So that was pretty cool. Or sheep. I don't know. Goat, sheep, whatever.
So my first experience seeing a bighorn.
Yeah.
We were running on I-80 across.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, you're from Denver, and then you cut through Vail and all that.
Yeah.
And they got a bighorn area there.
Yeah.
Well, we come around the corner. You know, and anybody that's driven through the mountains, you realize it's a sheer cliff down to the shoulder.
Yep.
Come out and then down again.
Yep.
You literally come around a corner, and there is this freaking ram, this freaking white, standing on the shoulder of the road that we almost freaking side clipped.
Yep.
That was my experience of a bighorn.
You know what, bud? That was actually my first experience with a bighorn, too. It was on 80. My mom and Dan were actually driving us to the Continental Divide, and they're like, "Holy crap, there's a pile of them." And it was a sheer cliff and everything. Like,
yeah. They're just standing on the shoulder of the road. Like, I don't know any idea where he came from. Yep.
But I guess the thing that I was most amazed by on the trip was the Gunnison National Park. I didn't realize how insanely steep and dangerous the Gunnison National Park Black Canyon was. It was insane, dude. Like, because fence was right here, 1,000-foot drop, like, sheer cliff. Like, I did it on my Onyx, and it was a 1,600-foot drop in, I believe, 30 feet. So, folks, if you want to check out a national park where you feel like you could die at any minute, the Gunnison's where it's at, man. Like, super cool. So,
that's everybody's goal on vacation, Eric, is to go somewhere where you feel like you're going to die.
Yeah. Well, that's, I don't know. That's my type of style, I guess. I love adventure. And I guess there's another sketchy thing. We took Highway 92. It takes you out of Gunnison, and it was steep mountainside that actually Lisa was driving, and it was a straight cliff right there. And they talked about the Million Dollar Highway being the world's most dangerous highway. That Highway 92 coming out of Gunnison, And we got a little bit more sketched up because we started getting towards 7,500 feet. Temperature was like 65. We got up to 8,500, 9,000 feet. Temperature was 40 degrees. Then it dropped to 39, 38. And this rain was coming down hard, and we're like, we're in this piece of crap rental car. If it starts snowing, this is not going to be a good situation. Luckily, it stayed warm enough. We didn't get any snow, so that was another sketchy experience. So, oh, and I won't talk about the other the other experience that I had, or should I?
Man, that's up to you.
I will just say I had to get help out with some CPR, and we'll leave it at that. It was kind of messed up. So make sure you're hydrated. If you go out west when it's 90 degrees out and you're up in age, bring some water. Bring stuff where you don't have a heart attack. So that's my final thought on that.
Yeah, take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize they're getting dehydrated out there because it's so dry.
Yeah, and the guy had his heart attack right in the middle of the day, and it was 85, 90 degrees out, and he was probably pushing 75 to 85. It was not ideal, so we'll leave it at that. But other than that, I don't have any more thoughts. I appreciate everyone watching tonight, and hopefully you learned something about tackle storage. Bud had some great tips there. I think the two takeaways that I take from it is check into that Amish tackle company, Amish Outfitters Tackle, for those locking systems or tackle systems. And that silicone, is it like a paper? Silicone?
It says that little paper pouch. It's got silicone beads. They absorb moisture.
Yeah. So that's kind of the... Yeah.
You can pick up a pack of 100 for like $14 or something on Amazon. I don't know.
Yeah. So that's what I'll leave with you, or leave you with tonight here. Appreciate watching RBP After Dark. Hopefully you guys like the new reboot, and appreciate you guys watching, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.